This is a Real Footy podcast trade period special. This is the final Real Footy podcast trade period special for this year. The trade period has ended in a whimper, not a bang. My name is Michael Gleeson, and joining me at the end of this torturous week of inertia, Pete Ryan, Dan Cherney, and Sam McClure. Welcome to you all.
Welcome, Mick. I'm not sure if it was a whimper in the end because Joe Danaher, Jack Martin.
Well, he was left a whimper.
Correct. He was whimpering, but it was fairly sensational that didn't actually happen in the end. He didn't manage to get to the Swans.
Yeah, so the quick recap, you're probably aware of this already by now, but the big deals that were supposed to happen didn't. So Joe Danaher didn't get to Sydney, which meant Tom Papley didn't get to Carlton. And in the meantime, Jack Martin's also been left hanging out of contract, having requested a trade to Carlton. And that didn't happen. Where do you reckon that ends up now, Sam?
Well, the Jack Martin piece is very significant. I think Danaher will be the headline for a while, but there was the line of thinking that that may not get done. And Cleese, as you and Jake Noel properly pointed out in The Age, it became a real possibility that Jack would be left to potentially now go into the preseason draft, something that we haven't seen with a player of Jack's calibre for several years.
Yeah, well, Dan, you've spoken to Tony Cochran as well before, and he's often wanted to get tough, and he's wanted the Suns to be tough in trades.
Yep.
They've done that this time around. I think in the end it was a future second and a future third that they had on the table from Carlton for Martin. And they're saying, well, we're not going to use that next year. The picks that we've already got available to us next year. So you're offering big dollars to this guy, I think in the realm of $700,000.
Yeah, that's right.
Show us something meaningful. Without that, we're not going to do it.
Is that tough, which I actually admire their stance, or is it just rational? They're not going to use the picks. So the risk that most clubs face when they let a player not be traded and go into the preseason draft is that they end up getting nothing, whereas Gold Coast didn't really face that risk because they've already got enough good draft picks.
Yeah, that's true. It was an easy position to take a principled stance on because they weren't actually risking the whole lot.
Because they've got first pick in the national and the preseason drafts, whichever Jack decides to go into. Obviously, they're not going to take Jack Martin first in the national draft, but they could well redraft him in the preseason draft if the price is right. And you've also got next year, with these recent concessions they've got, I think that's the thing we shouldn't forget. They've got a lot, the Gold Coast Academy, they've got the likes of Alex Davies and others next year, which they can pick up. And they're going to have talented kids that are going to fill these spots that they would otherwise be the option to use with the second and third round picks. So Malcolm Rose is kind of Butterick. They've got Raoul Anderson. They don't need second and third round picks next year.
No, and they know that. So what the dilemma will be now, does he get delisted in time to be able to put himself in the national, not preseason draft, and therefore put a price on his head in there as well, which you can do in the national? And therefore, when does Carlton pull a trigger on using a pick for him? Or does he get through, does it push through to the preseason draft? In which case, Gold Coast say, well, we're going to take him back. We're going to use pick one in the preseason draft and take him. Now, that means people have threatened this in the past and no one's actually followed through on it. I think that there's been an argument when it's been threatened before that it constitutes unconscionable conduct to prohibit basically a player being able to move, not being prepared to trade him, and then not allowing him to go through even a draft process. So that hasn't been tested. I wonder whether it will be tested this time. But then their view is, well, we take him back. Even if he puts $700 on his head, a one-year deal, he's a free agent at the end of next year. If he goes through to free agency next year, they go, okay, well, if he goes and he accepts a $700,000 offer from Carlton, then that would constitute first-round draft compensation as a free agent. So that, if that's tied to their first pick as opposed to even being at the end, even an end of first-round pick is going to be better than anything they were offered this year. But if it ends up being sufficient that it's tied to their first pick, they could still have the first pick in the draft next year, which would again give them one and two. So in that sense, it makes absolute sense to keep him.
Are you surprised, given that the Bulldogs and Essendon would be a risk that they might actually go for Martin in the draft if he went into the draft, are you surprised that Carlton, with Papley not being available, they didn't decide to use that pick 9 and somehow get Martin?
Well, that offer from Gold Coast was, we'll swap 9 and 15 with you. So you slide six spots and you get Martin.
Yeah,
and I think they wanted a future second maybe.
Give us a second.
Give us your second. But effectively, I reckon it could have been done just for the pick slide.
Yeah, and for the fans, Gleese. I mean, I know that's completely underrated and I know they might get him anyway. But Carlton fans picking up the paper on Thursday will think, well, we went after these three small forwards. The only one we got was a 32-year-old coming to the end of his career.
Yeah.
If we'd got Martin Dunn and slid six positions back in the draft and kept the first-round pick, I'm not sure too many Carlton fans would have had a problem with that.
Particularly when you're also going, oh, look, they're still going to, it means they go to the draft. Worst case, they go to the draft to get a top 10 pick. That's still good.
And potentially get him in the preseason.
And potentially get him in the preseason or somewhere else in the next month. It's absolutely not beyond the realm that Carlton still claim him somehow. But, you know, if they even just slide back to 15, they're able to then sell new coach, new hope, new beginning. We've brought back Eddie. Feel good feeling there. We've brought in a first round draft pick. Oh, and we've also got Jack Martin coming into the mix.
Who's
and that's
work
immediately. And then we haven't touched anything for next year.
Yep, completely agree.
Just worth touching on the Bulldogs. You touched on the Bulldogs earlier. Sam Power, their list manager, was asked, would they have did they consider making a late play for Martin during the trade period when it seemed that Carlton and Gold Coast weren't working out? And he said, no, they didn't. It's very hard to convince a player once they've nominated a club, which is interesting. I wonder if Sam Gray now comes into the equation as well, given they've missed out on Papley.
Yeah. That's a good thought. I think we skimmed over at the start probably the big name, because we're sort of acknowledging that
the big man
Joe Danaher is the big name, but he probably won't be the story for long. Where do you reckon that sits right now though, Pete?
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it? So Joe's going to have to go back, play a year with Essendon, having requested a trade in front of those supporters with free agency looming. So there's a couple of options for him. He just buries himself, gets in there, plays good football for a year, then opens himself up to go to Sydney as a free agent. He extends his contract with Essendon, which is debatable whether he'd want to do that. Essendon certainly be keen to do that. And he also sits in Melbourne, the bubble that he was supposedly hoping to escape, under even more pressure than he was.
Point. Yeah, well, Sam, I want to ask you about that, because you've had the running on this story from the start. You broke the story of him meeting with Tom Harley at his house. That was written off as just a coffee amongst friends, which became...
Which they still say, by the
which
way.
They still, well, it was a very nice coffee. But it does have a different complexion when he then turns around and asks for a trade. Do you get the sense, I got the sense from Essendon and Sydney afterwards that the push for him to go to Sydney was actually driven more by Joe than by the Swans?
Yeah, and I think there's validity in that statement, Gleese. I think that Joe has long wanted a move that would see him go out of Victoria. You know, it was less than 12 months ago that he was reported in the newspapers for having a beer while he was supposedly recovering from an injury. You know, one beer in his Fitzroy Northcote.
When you say the newspapers, not this one.
No, not this
one.
He's
at the Labor in Vane in Brunswick Street.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good pub.
Yeah, it is good.
Cash for comment.
But I think Pete, and he brought it up as trade period finished, raises a really good point that if he didn't want to be in the spotlight then, what's the spotlight going to look for him now? Because if you think about it, all scenarios, all eyes are going to be on him. He's either dominating and playing great footy and it's how do Essendon keep him, or he's not playing and it's, geez, they should have traded him. The guy can't get on the park. Or even worse, he's playing and he's not playing well. So we're going to be talking about Joe Danaher every week until he potentially extends, which I personally can't see happening given that his management went to Essendon less than 6 weeks ago, asked to extend, and Essendon said no.
Yeah, well, he's got the groin. They think he's turned the corner with the groins. He used the same surgeon as Buddy Franklin and Dan Menzel, and they're confident he can recover. They've obviously got a new medical team, or at least Justin Crowe's departed, and they've got a new fitness person in there to help Joe Danaher. The other thing to come out of this whole trade period is that my feeling is that Sydney didn't really control the narrative at all.
Completely agree.
They were really quiet.
Yeah, that's true. I think, though, that when it gets to the end of it and they haven't offered five, never formally offered the first round draft pick for Joe Danaher, it tells me they weren't serious.
Did you hear Charlie's rationale for that? Charlie Gardner, when he spoke?
He indicated that they sounded them out. If we actually did this, would it work? And they weren't satisfied that they got enough of a warm enough response that they bothered to follow
it's
through.
It's a ludicrous notion, really.
I mean, yeah, when's it formal and when's it informal?
Do you think, Cleese, if they had traded Tom Papley, got pick nine, gone to them and said, here's five and here's nine, it would have changed Essendon's mind?
Essendon was pretty staunch throughout that they wanted a player thrown in.
Because
They basically went to their trading in the last few years, you know, with Stringer and Scheel and Smith, and built this list and said, this is how it's all going to look. And they've built their own list to this point where they weren't prepared to go backwards. And the Swans were saying the same thing. We've been building a list. We're not going to now throw out one of our good players that we've been bringing in to do this deal. It's like, well, then the deal doesn't get done. And it didn't.
Why didn't Sydney say, we will give you 5 and 9 if you're publicly? That's on the table if we trade Tom Papley. And
yeah, put a bit of pressure on Essendon.
It does. I reckon they would have feared, if they put that deal out there early in the piece, they're going to say, well, yeah, of course, that's the starting position, 5 and 9. What else have you got for us?
Yeah.
And then you just end up in this circular thing. But I question the manager that takes that discussion with Sydney and says, okay, you've offered him a contract. How are you going to get the deal done? What deal was put to them to persuade them that they thought that the deal would get done?
Yep.
In order to make this public and in order to make a big push for it when he's a contracted player. That was a really surprising bit of management.
Well, normally the management has a pretty good plan going in as to where their starting position is and where their finishing position is going to be. Yeah. And everyone knows that where that is.
We're not going to hang them out there if
And Joe Danaher should know that if this is not accepted by us and it doesn't get done, but there's no sort of confusion about what potentially might be offered or not offered. It doesn't appear as though that was laid out as carefully as it should have been.
And unfortunately for the manager, which is Nigel Carmody of TLA, who's a very experienced campaigner, he's done this twice, you know, having Bryce Gibson in 2016, who did get done the following year, to be fair, but...
Which might happen again this time.
Yeah, exactly.
Papley potentially getting done. Danaher potentially getting done next
angst
year.
Though, but there was a sense, I think, at the end that there was a bit of a swing back to club power over player power. Yeah. Two contracted players were told, yeah, you might want to go, we're not trading you.
So well, Papley stays. He's got 4 years.
Yeah. But having said that, Brad Hill gets traded.
Well, the other one is, though, you see James Aish and Blake Akers, who are both effectively squeezed out of their respective clubs to Freo, which is, again, club power. So... which happened a bit last year with Ryan Burton. So it works both ways. I mean, you can have players requesting trades, but clubs are also...
Power, club persuasion. So Aish and Akers both get three-year deals in a team that's going to play them every week, and they get sold that they've got 1 year left at their current club and they may not play every week. So
and might be gone after that.
Both of them, I actually think Aish drove it because he read the tea leaves. He said, oh, hang on, he's heard all the stories about their salary cap and the tight salary cap and thinking, well... good luck getting a new contract at the end of next year. And they've brought in Quainer and they've got Noble and they've got Nathan Murphy. So he looks at it and thinks, well, they want me. They're giving me a three-year deal and I'm going to struggle to get another contract here. It's just a good, pragmatic, smart decision. And the coach, he knows and the coach wants him.
Just a question. What did you think of Josh Jenkins going to Geelong and emerge today?
I think it was the Paddy Dangerfield sympathy vote, wasn't it?
Paddy pushed Stephen Wells, and even Stephen Wells, the list manager at Geelong, admitted that Paddy had provided a persuasive case.
I think it was the only way in which he was going to get to a club, because it sounded like Adelaide was prepared to pay his contract out and get him out of there, and they were struggling to find a home for him because I think that the reputation and the stench around him, for want of a better word, was such that clubs were thinking, oh, I don't want to go down there. I don't want to go down that path. But someone that actually knew him in Paddy said, what are you all talking about? There's nothing wrong with him. Well, I'll happily have him come in here.
One thing Geelong did say is they recognised in the prelim when they lost Hawkins that they didn't have a suitable backup. So they had to play Lockie Henderson in that role. So if nothing else, given they've got him for a packet of chips, he's a backup depth player.
Sam, do you feel that stench around Josh Jenkins is fair?
No, completely unfair. The proof is in the pudding with Adelaide. They denied everything that was going on for 18 months. It's been a max exodus. Players wanted out. Their club champion was trying to get to the Gold Coast Suns. I think that says enough.
Yeah, well, there's a trotting track at Geelong for Josh Jenkins, so he'll be pretty happy.
Well, there's also... Jack Stephen was also done.
Yep.
Eventually.
Saints will be filthy about that, Cleese. Pick 58.
Pick 58, and they eventually gave up 37 Geelong for Josh Jenkins.
Yep. So
Yeah, so they valued Josh Jenkins more highly. But Josh Jenkins,
they got
Josh Jenkins
back.
Will play.
They got something back.
Mm. But Josh Jenkins, we know, will play. Whereas so there's got to be
so
doubt.
Jack,
there's got to be doubt, though.
Yeah, but I just think the change of scenery, the change up in his routine, I think, will help Jack Stephen. He's never been a great trainer. He's always admitted that.
Exactly, but if he stayed, would he be playing? You know, I think they
that's a fair question.
He hasn't been playing. It's clearly an issue. This environment still, he needs to have a circuit breaker in some way.
Yeah, and look, there were younger teammates approaching the club about the condition that Jack was sometimes in. Yeah. So it was clear that he had to leave.
St Kilda overall did well.
No, they did, but Geelong were always going to have the whip hand when it came to Jack Stephen.
St Kilda had said as much. They'd said that we just want to make Jack Stephen happy. They were on the record saying that in August.
Yep.
So they didn't have much room to go from there.
No, so Dan, you've been across a lot of St Kilda moves. Just run us through. In the end, they got virtually everything they wanted. Bruce went out.
Yeah, they pretty much have no picks now, which sort of makes sense.
They
brought the players in.
When you got half the players on the trade period, you can't have any picks.
They eventually got Bradley Hill done.
Yep.
They paid a bunch of later picks, but
a premium for him.
Well, did they? They didn't have to do six in the end.
Mm. No, but they had to do 10.
They did give up six for him because they gave up six for him.
They got
Freo didn't get six for him.
Freo didn't get six for him, and that's probably on Freo a bit. And you worry a bit about what happens with Liam Henry in the Next Generation Academy come the draft. Whether that will.
I'm not going to spend any time between now and then worrying about Liam Henry.
That's a real champing. maybe the listeners out west. No, look, I think the Saints, they gave up a lot of picks and clearly a lot of cap space, but the Saints, the list wasn't that good, so they have to pay players. You have to pay a certain amount of your cap. Brad Hill is as close to an A grader as he'll probably have at the moment, especially having lost Stephen. And with the likes of Max King still a fair way off, I think Zach Jones is handy. Dougal Howard could be a very good player, but obviously the jury's probably still out. Paddy Ryder, I'm a bit concerned about that. Not much of a price, and Dan Butler probably back up really at this point. I would have thought
Bruce is the one that could come back to bite them.
I think so.
Yeah, his record is too good for him to go for pick 32, but in the end, the Dogs had them over a barrel a bit.
Well, what would their forward line be? Max King, we presume, plays
if he plays.
Tim Membry.
And Paddy Ryder.
And Paddy McCartan.
It'll be Marshall.
So there's lots of ifs.
Ryder's going to start in the ruck.
By nine blokes in the forward line.
No, there's lots of ifs there.
And three in the back.
For their list.
Yep. Okay. Alex Keith.
Got a bit nasty, that one.
Mm.
Got a bit nasty pretty late. I mean, Sam Power is a pretty pretty calm guy, but even Justin Reid said 2 hours before the trade deadline, it looks unlikely to get done. So. Yeah. I think there was a bit of spite in that one.
Given the fact that that operation, the story you revealed.
Given the fact that the Crows didn't tell the Bulldogs or the Saints that he had a crack above his chin, it didn't help.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's 28 and had a leg operation. I don't think he would give up too much. And they were still trying to tie in 13. I don't know what they were thinking for that.
Yeah, but they wanted to give Keith in a second rounder for the Bulldogs 13. I think the Bulldogs, when we look back, will be one of those teams that had a really good trade in value.
We've got a listener question from Chris. He says, hi team. Doggies fan here from New Zealand. Could you please touch on why you think player-for-player trades in the AFL are rare compared to sports such as NBA? That is a good point, Chris, because it is virtually always...
the last one I can remember is Callum Sinclair going to Sydney and Lewis Jetta going to the West Coast. That would have been 3 or 4 years ago. Probably.
Didn't Dom Tyson get traded for Braden Pruce last year?
That's true. Yeah, that's...
But it's still rare is the point. And I think points associated often complicates the picture because there's points attached to picks and clubs often have competing and have differing interests in what they want out of a draft pick, whether they want a player or they want picks.
Probably also says something a bit about player power because rarely are you going to get two players from different clubs who want to go to the opposite club. And generally, players get where they want. So that's probably the biggest
thing. That's true.
Yeah, and it's rare that clubs, for some reason, ever have exact currency. Yeah. And thinking, this player is exactly worth that player. Yeah. It's always, nah, he's slightly better. I think you owe me a back end of fifth with a bag of chips as well.
Which is even funny with those two we've just mentioned. Like both ruckmen for smaller players.
Bruce ahead of Tyson at this particular stage?
Yeah, just.
In the list and trophy.
Yeah.
Just.
Nice,
well, Jim. That is all we have time for at the end of this exhausting period. But we will be back. Don't forget to head to theage.com.
We will be back.
We will be back over the next few weeks. That's all we have time for. Don't forget to head to theage.com.au/AFL for all the news and analysis. We'll have the best draft coverage in the business with all of those stories about players that will be the stars of tomorrow. And before we go, we'd like you to send through your feedback. We're running a survey, and if you complete it, you can go into the running to win one of 10 $100 gift cards personally signed by Dan Cherney. Head to that website, theage.com.au/AFL, to find the link and let us know what you think. As always, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next season.
I didn't agree to that.